podcasts and TV shows and radio shows now is like the guest never knows when you actually started recording.
Okay.
So
it's just started already, yep. Probably.
Yeah, maybe.
There you go.
So this is Eddie from the Eddie Knows Fitness podcast, and I'm here with Eric Gouge.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. Thanks for being here today. So the background on Eric and kind of why I thought he would be super interesting. Eric's a veteran, USMC, real estate agent.
Yep.
Parent.
Yep.
And when I first decided to do this podcast, because I'm the host, so I make the rules, and I thought, okay, this is going to be a lot about health and wellness and fitness and, you know, psychology, and that'll be a lot of it, but fatherhood's a big part of it too.
Huge.
And, you know, you having that unique perspective of being a Marine, you can speak to the psychology too, for sure. So, I guess give me a run sheet. Like I didn't move here till I was a little bit older, but so we didn't grow up together per se, but we went to school together for a long time.
Yeah.
In high school and such. So I guess tell me what happened after we graduated in 2004, everything after 2000, or give me what happened right after. What did you do right out of school?
So right out of school, I'd already committed to go into the Marine Corps. My mom and dad had to sign me off. They had to do the waiver to join the Marine Corps. And so I was just headed off to boot camp. I had a whole summer to hang out and party down with my friends and, you know, live life a little bit,
yeah,
being a civilian. And then next thing I know, that November, I was off and to boot camp in San Diego.
So, tell me about boot camp. Like, you know, we see it on like movies and TV shows and it's hell, right? Like that's how it is in movies and TV shows and stuff. I mean, your perception, like what's maybe like a crazy story where you're like, fuck, I can't believe that these fuckers are making us do this. You know, like whoever the sergeants are or whoever's giving you the orders.
Well, it's definitely, you know, it's an eye-opening experience. It's not that bad. You know, it could be worse, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's a lot of myth and, you know, perception from things you've heard from people. And then you get there and it's people yelling at you constantly. It's people throwing your stuff everywhere. You're losing gear. You're just, it's almost a nightmare at first,
right,
you know?
Right.
And then it just turns into an everyday normal thing. You're just constantly yelling as loud as you can. Going as fast as you can, getting stuff done as quick as possible. I mean, that's really all it is. It's all about discipline. It doesn't get you healthy. It probably makes you unhealthy more than anything. I mean, when my mom and dad came down for my graduation, I was 145 pounds. I'm 6'2".
Yeah.
I was 145 pounds. I went in at like 160. I lost 20, you know, almost 20 pounds.
To put that into perspective, at my lightest, you're six. How tall are you?
6'2".
So I'm 5'6". And the lightest I've ever been as an adult is 137. So yeah. You were like this. We're drinking Pacifico right now. You looked like this beer bottle.
Yeah. Yeah. I was smaller. I was a lot frailer. My mom was like, you look like a scared dog right now when she saw me, you know, cause I was just like, I was so on edge. It was always, you know, yes, sir. No, sir. You know, I went through this 3 months of just constantly being in this chaos and controlled by, you know, my drill instructors, right? Everything was for meeting their standards and doing what they want you to do. You know, that's what boot camp is. It's about finding your discipline. It's not about getting in shape. You know, it really doesn't make you a better rifleman. It doesn't make, you know, you don't shoot better. You don't become more athletic. You just learn how to say yes and no. I mean, because that's ultimately your job. I mean, my job was to say, you know, to say yes and go do what I was told to do. I was not supposed to say no. You know, my job is to go and find the enemy. I mean,
what was the toughest adjustment for you? Like, again, my only perspective of this stuff is what's in a movie or what's in a TV show. But sometimes it seems like the people that have a hard time adjusting to that life, again, yes or no, like, you're going there to be taught how to take orders.
Yeah.
And if you grew up with maybe a dad who, excuse me, was a heavy disciplinary, like maybe that's something you're used to. Or if you went to a boarding school, maybe that's what you're used to. I guess what was the toughest adjustment for you? Because like you didn't strike me. I mean, you went to a public, we went to public school.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a, you know, it wasn't boot camp like a school. It was, you know, pretty like stuff like that.
And I was a super, you know, I mean, you know, I was just a normal kid. I mean, I was a small kind of scrawny kid already and, listened to punk rock music, you know, and I hated the government. I hated the establishment demand. And then all of a sudden I just made this hard right turn and went into the military, you know, and, it really wasn't that hard of a transition for me, honestly. It was pretty, I've always come from a fairly disciplined family. My family has all been in the military. My grandparents were in the military. And, you know, so it kind of just came second nature.
Yep.
I mean, and I think it does for most people. The people I think that have the hardest time adjusting are people who are actually were in boarding school and different stuff like that. You know, I think they've already been going through this for so long and to continue and it just amps it up even more. And I think that it almost is too much for them, you know?
Someone, maybe it's kind of like the reverse. My wife and I have this talk a lot about like, think about like very, very sheltered kids that never went out and party, like their parents, you know, curfew's 8 o'clock and you can't, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. And then they go to Washington State University or they go to Arizona State. They go to a school that's nowhere near their family. And now all the reins are cut away and they can do whatever they want. And they go fucking nuts.
Yeah. They and lose it.
And that it's almost like the inverse of that. People that have been accustomed to this lifestyle and then they get out of that environment and now suddenly they're thrust back into it and they have a tough time.
Yeah.
Adjusting to it.
Absolutely. You know, and I mean, the only goal you have in boot camp is to survive, right? I mean, you just don't want to get hurt. That's like the biggest fear in boot camp. It's like nothing else matters besides don't getting hurt.
No, like, I guess, you know? Give me a situation where you could get hurt.
I mean, you really, I mean, you're doing hand-to-hand combat, you know, you're fighting what they're called pugil sticks, which are basically just, you know, big, it's hard to explain. It's just a stick with, you know, some bags on the end and you're hitting each other as hard as you can. You're climbing up, you know, walls and there's a ton of ways to get hurt. The biggest thing, believe it or not, was, pink eye. Pink eye was the thing that took people out.
I think when I think of pink eye, I think of strip clubs.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, it, and that's what, yeah, most people think. And it, and that's the thing, you know, you have 100 people living in a squad bay and you're taking showers together. I mean, you're, and you're literally being told like, okay, we're going to take a shower now. You have 60 seconds to go and basically walk through the shower.
Yep.
And they call it nut to butt. You're just right, you know, and you're just in a line of guys walking through a shower and then you have, you know, and then there's four guys peeing in the same toilet at the same time because you have a minute and a half to get to the bathroom and then get back out. And I mean, it's all about, you know, as fast as you can, as you know, doing everything as fast and as intense as you can to get it done. I mean, because they're trying to make someone that's going to ultimately kill someone.
Sure.
I mean, that's their job, right? They're not trying to make someone that's going to just, you know, maybe follow the rules or maybe want to do something. It's like you have to have 100% conviction that this is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, otherwise you're not going to survive, you know?
All in.
Yeah.
Exactly. How long is boot camp?
It's 3 months for the Marine Corps. I think they're going to make it longer actually. Now I heard a thing on, you know, online and talking about it, make another 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
And it's basically like the first month is just all like learning drill, just learning how to be in the military.
Yep.
You know, you learn what the acronyms are, the slang is, all that stuff. And then you go out and you go to, it's called field month, basically, you know, that field week and all that stuff. And you go up to your start boot camp in San Diego and you're basically in downtown San Diego, right next to the airport. If you're ever at the airport and you look across, you're looking at the Marine Corps boot camp from the whole West Coast and from the whole West side of the Mississippi. And ultimately, you know, then you'll go up to Camp Pendleton for a month. You learn your combat skills. You'll do the rifle range. You'll, you know, do crucible, stuff like that, where you're out in the mud and, you know, just living out in the field basically and getting thrashed all day and doing push-ups constantly and butterfly kicks and just getting yelled at in the dirt.
Where was your first tour out of the United States and what year did that happen?
So, shit. It's hard to remember all these things now. So it's amazing how all this stuff kind of just...
Well, it is 2017. We are talking about 14 years ago.
Yeah, that is true. my first deployment was 2006 or no, maybe 2005. No, I turned 20. Okay. I turned 20 in Thailand. That's how I spent my first.
So that would have been 06.
Yeah. So probably. 06. Yeah. So my first deployment, we went on a booze cruise is what it's called. So I was a machine gunner in Charlie Company. It was a helicopter company, and we were just basically on an LHA, which is a smaller carrier that's just, you know, it's 1,000 feet long and has helicopters and Harriers on it. And we basically just sat in the South Pacific. And we went to Australia, we went to Singapore, Thailand.
Sounds like a cruise.
Well, that's exactly it. It is. It really is, honestly, besides that you're stuck on this 1970s Vietnam era, you know, ship. And the water tastes like gasoline half the time.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, it's not fun.
Yeah.
But then you get to get off the boat for 4 days and go party.
That's awesome.
We went to... went to Australia first, to Hawaii, then Australia, then we went to Singapore. Went to Singapore for a couple days.
Wow! So did you you cruised from Hawaii to us? I'm thinking about a map. Basically,
so we left from west. San Diego to Hawaii. Then from Hawaii, we went down, crossed the equator, went down to Australia, got off the boat for 2 weeks in Australia, and did training down there in Queensland, which is really cool. Got to go in the outback. Didn't see any kangaroos, though, which was really disappointing.
I'm surprised. We went to Australia, and we just saw dead kangaroos on the side of the road.
There was nothing. We probably killed some. I wouldn't be surprised. We were just shooting machine guns all day and lighting stuff on fire from machine guns. But, yeah, so we were just out there for 2 weeks, and then we went to Singapore. We actually didn't get to get off the boat in Australia and party, which we were all really disappointed about.
Yeah.
You hear all these amazing stories of Libo in Australia and how it's like the dream place to ever go hang out and party.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but we had to leave because a typhoon came in, and so we had to get our boats out of there.
Damn it.
Yeah, so upset. It was probably one of my worst moments of my Marine Corps career is I didn't get to go party in Australia, honestly.
Yeah.
It was like everything you had heard and looked forward to, and all the old timers that used to do this before Iraq and and Afghanistan, and they always used to go to Australia and party. And you're like,
so what was your understanding of, we went to high school at a very interesting time. Cause when we went into high school, it would have been the year 2000. And I mean, I'm sure that there was obviously like terror out there and stuff like that. But then
we didn't know anything about it.
Right. Then we're sophomores and September 11th happens and then the world's different. And then 2003 happens and we invade Iraq.
Yep.
And then you go on your first tour 2 years later. Did you get any sense where if you would have entered the Marine Corps in 2000 versus 2004, how different, or if at all, would your experience have been different?
Oh, it would have been completely different.
Okay.
It was just, I mean, and the Marine Corps has changed. It's gone back to the old style too. I mean, when I got in, it was my unit had just got back from Najaf. They'd been in the battle for the cemetery in there, you know, the world's largest cemetery, you know, hand-to-hand fighting. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the craziest stories you've ever heard. They were all in the invasion, all these guys. I mean, it was truly just insane stories that you heard from these guys. And it was about, we're going to Iraq and we're going to fight and you have to be ready. You know, it was always get ready, get ready, get ready. We're going to be, you know, you're a machine gunner, you know, you're going to be slaying bodies. You're going to be doing all this stuff, you know, prepare yourself to see battle,
right?
You know? And then we find out, hey, we're going, this is the first infantry unit to not go into Iraq. You know, we're just going on a booze cruise.
Yeah.
And that's what they call it. It's a booze cruise, you know? And then it's just a lot of monotony, cleaning. I mean, clean guns constantly, cleaning, you know.
Even when they're already clean, probably.
Yeah. Just over and over, cleaning and then shooting and then cleaning. And then, you know, it's just, it's like Groundhog Day or Groundhog Day. You know, it's just over and over the same thing, repetitive every single day.
Yep.
It's pretty funny, actually.
So you did multiple tours.
Yeah. So the first tour we did was the booze cruise and then we went all around. We did go into Kuwait for like a month and we sat there thinking, oh, tomorrow's going to be the day we go in Iraq.
Yeah.
Then the next day, tomorrow's going to be the day we go in Iraq. And we just all sat there getting fat on Burger King. And, you know,
there's Burger King.
Yeah, there's Burger Kings. There's all sorts of stuff. They had like coffee houses. They had like the USO, like bringing bands in, you know, and like all this
like a vacation.
Stuff. Yeah, no, it really was. And there's like pools and stuff. You're like, man, I want to go in the pool. Of course, they wouldn't let us go in the pool. We were just new guys.
Yeah.
You know, no, you're not going in the pool. We're going to go do gun drills and practice, you know, set up our machine guns.
Yeah.
And so anyway, after that, you know, then we left and we did some stuff in Dubai and then we came back into through Thailand and then Hawaii and came back home.
And then you went to Fallujah, right?
No. So my second tour. So when I got back, I ended up going into a sniper team then. did that, and then we went to Western Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and we went into shit. I can't remember the name of it anymore. What was it? Husseiba. There we go. So we flew into Husseiba, and we relieved the other infantry battalion, and we took over. And this was 2007 when I went back for my second tour.
Yeah,
and things were pretty quiet there. I mean, you know, every once in a while, just basically IEDs going off.
Yeah,
and that's what our job was to try to find people laying IEDs and shoot them.
Yeah,
and we really never found anyone. There wasn't a lot going on. It was just a lot of desert and pain of hiking for miles. And
is it like I've had some friends that are like firefighters, and I think, like, you know, you watch a firefighter show or you watch Backdraft or something, and yeah. your perception is that a firefighter is always out, like, they're fighting fires, right?
Yeah.
Like they're saving the Sears Tower from crumbling. But then as I talk to these guys, they're all telling me, like, we might see a fire once or twice a year.
Yeah.
And outside of that, it's like, we'll get a call or two a day of, like, an old woman fell.
Yeah.
And we go there and we pick her up.
Go help her.
Yeah. He's like, a lot of it is just honestly sitting around. You're just sort of waiting for something to happen, and nothing really ever happens. I mean, is that kind of what your experience was?
Yeah. You know,
like?
I mean, my first patrol ever, actually, we got shot at, and then nothing happened after that for months. I mean, I was there for 7 months, and I went on, I mean, I probably spent a good 70% of my time outside the wire with in our sniper team, sitting in a hole
mm-hmm.
and just watching farmers.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've gotten to a couple firefights here and there, but nothing ever crazy. I've watched Humvees blow up in front of me. You know, I've seen a lot of stuff blow up, but I mean, really it was just boring.
Yeah.
I mean, it was 99%. I mean, I was looking the other day, I have all my old logbooks. So we used to keep radio logs of everything. And I used to have ma'am, which is a middle-aged male or military-aged male. And it'd be like, ma'am is taking sheep to the water.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, just logs of like
somebody
the most bullshit you've ever seen yeah. in your life, right? And it's like the most boring thing ever. You're just sitting behind a sniper rifle or on your binoculars and you're just watching people.
I mean, as boring as it is, at least you're watching. Imagine the person that gets that log and has to type it and put it into a
yeah.
system
and
somewhere.
So luckily we didn't have to do that. That would be horrible, right? That would be the worst job ever. Mm-hmm. But I mean, but we loved it. I mean, it was fun. I'd rather be outside the wire than be stuck at the FOB, which
yep.
is the forward operating base. And we used to call it like FOBits, right? Like people who never leave, or
yeah.
POGs, people who weren't grunts. We used to always like just make fun of them, right?
Yeah.
Like you never leave the wire. You don't load your weapon. You know, you're not doing anything.
Right.
You're just sitting here, you know, at the chow hall eating food.
Yeah.
You know, and playing video games, playing Xbox.
Playing Call of Duty.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so, you know, it was fun. It was, I honestly had a great time. I mean, we got to meet kids, you know, I was playing with kids all the time, you know, on patrols and
yeah.
eating local food and sitting down, like drinking tea with people.
Now, generally speaking, like, I think a lot of times, like the perception in the United States is that everybody outside of the United States hates us.
Yeah.
Jenny and I have traveled all over the world, and I think that, like, I wouldn't say that. The only time we ever would get like a hint of that is that we're in like Sydney, for instance, and the service is incredibly bad. But that might just be because that's how
yeah.
culturally how they are.
Yeah.
I mean, did you get the sense in all these different places that you went that
no.
like you're talking about playing with kids and drinking at
no,
coffee houses?
I mean,
and
it was like, and I've traveled all around the world too. I've, you know, been all around with my wife. We've gone to Europe and stuff, and I've never gotten the feeling anywhere that I wasn't liked. And I think it really comes down to, you know, if you're a douchebag, people are still gonna treat you like a douchebag, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you're an asshole, people know it doesn't matter what language you're in,
yeah,
you're
yeah.
an asshole no matter what, right?
Right.
And I think it comes down to, if you're nice to people, people are still gonna be nice to you.
So essentially how the world should work.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And I mean, people were some of the nicest people ever. You know, a lot of really touchy-feely people in Iraq, too. Like, everyone's really touchy, like, loves to, like, grab your hands and stuff.
Interesting. I wouldn't have thought that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and it's just, like, it's a completely different experience. You don't speak the language. There's a huge language barrier. And all you have is these things like food and, you know, kicking a soccer ball with a little kid
yep.
or throwing candy to them or whatnot, you know. I mean, those little kids were kind of assholes too, but you know, they'd throw rocks at us for fun. Like if we didn't have candy for them, they'd throw rocks at our Humvees and stuff, you know? And, or if we didn't like give them a bottle of Gatorade, they'd be like the most, like we just destroyed the world. You
right,
know?
Right,
like,
right.
Where's my Gatorade?
Right, right. So like I was looking through like your Facebook album and you had an album said The Place Known as Hell.
Yeah.
So like A, where is this?
So,
and two, I guess like what time frame are we talking about here?
Yeah, so this is Iraq. This is when I, so it's 2007. So I got there in April and it's kind of a jumble of pictures. Some of it's actually, I think from when I was in Camp Pendleton too. Well, actually, no, all of them are Iraq. I haven't looked at these forever. So basically, you know, most of these are like the river crossing. That's when we paid a fisherman to let us go and he drove us across the Euphrates River, which is the one of the coolest. Like, that's the one thing I miss so much about Iraq is like the Euphrates River and just like, I mean, like a sunset and a sunrise in Iraq. It's like the most like surreal thing ever. It's a beautiful sight. But yeah, these were all just, you know, with me and my friends, the bottom picture there. So that one where the guy's kind of, he's got the finger against his nose and he's kind of like, oh shit, what just happened?
Yeah.
That's when we almost got smoked by like 100 Iraqi policemen. We were sitting on the Euphrates River and we were watching the river trying to find like weapons caches and people like floating stuff down the river.
Yeah.
And this little kid like runs into our hide. And we're like, oh shit, what do we do with this kid, right? You know, and this is like things you hear like lone survivor, right? Like they let the kid go, right? And they all die. And so like, what are we supposed to do? You know, are we just going to hold this kid hostage until we leave, you know?
I'm well,
like,
there's that, I mean, that famous scene in American Sniper where Chris Kyle is looking at, he's looking at the kid and he just can't do it.
Yeah.
And the kid ends up having a, you know, a missile or something.
Yeah, he's got a grenade or something, right? And
you just never know. I think that's like the, like to me, that seems like maybe it's the hardest part of, again, like I've never been in the military, but regardless of the branch, like who do you trust and who do you not?
Well, that's the thing, right? And you ultimately, and that's being in the military, you learn to not trust anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's when ultimately comes. I kind of question any, and I don't do it anymore because especially since I'm in real estate, you know, I've opened up and changed my, like the way I think a lot, which I think a lot of people have a really hard time doing. You know, and you never know who's going to try to kill you. Like these guys, the same police officers you see in this picture shot, they actually shot one of our friends. He got shot in the leg. And they claimed it. Oh, we thought you were Al Qaeda, you know, like, yeah, I'm sure you thought that we were Al Qaeda.
Yeah.
The seven white guys, you know what I mean?
Right.
And that's the one mission I wasn't on too. I was pretty happy actually. Yeah. I wasn't on that, but like these guys, so we let the kid go because we're like, I'm not gonna hold a kid hostage.
Right.
I'm not gonna do anything, and we're right on the river. Next thing I know, there's like trucks pulling up, and there's just these guys lying there on like loudspeakers, and I'm on radio watch right now. So my job, I never went to sniper school. I was gonna go to sniper school, and we just didn't have the time. We only had a couple snipers in our platoon, and there were everyone else was 6-man teams with usually one sniper per team. And I was the point man. So I led all the missions. I was like the point person that would, you know, decide where we're going to go, how we're going to get there, how long it's supposed to take us, all this type of stuff. And so I was just on radio watch and I was just listening to like these guys coming down. All these trucks are getting online with like RPKs and stuff, you know, and AK-47s. And they're like, they started like saying stuff. I'm just like, oh, fuck. We're dead.
Yeah.
Like that sort of thing. We're like, we're going to get smoked. We're all dead. We're jumping into the Euphrates River, get ready to drop everything
and
throw grenades in our gear.
Yeah.
And, like I'm on the radio talking and I was on a nationwide net, like, so basically the whole entire AO, we were on a satellite radio cause we couldn't get radio reception. We were that far out.
Yep.
And so everyone can hear you on the radio. I mean, it's stuff that you only do check-ins to say, hey, we're still alive,
right,
basically. And I'm on the radio saying like, we've got these guys lining up and they're coming down and they're about to start shooting us.
Yeah.
And we were, you know, and the whole entire like net just went like silent, you know? And ultimately what happened, we're like, let's just, you know, we all have our guns up. We're ready to start. Like if they start firing, we're going to start firing. And we just like, fuck it. Let's just stand up.
Yeah.
So we just stood up and we're like, whoa, 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 you know? And they're like talking to us and, you know, we couldn't understand anything they're saying, you know? And then I brought the camera mic. Oh, let's get a picture of you guys, because Iraqis love to take pictures. Right?
Yeah.
They're all about it. They're like, no, we want to get, you know, everyone wants to get a picture with you and like wants to be in a picture of you. And these guys were like, oh, you're going to take pictures. We're out of here. And they just left.
I wonder why. I mean, is it like if they were to see themselves or if somebody saw them on these pictures on social media, like,
so ultimately like our theory was that these were all dirty guys. Right. Yeah. And so this area that we were in was an area that they hadn't seen Americans for a while, had been pretty much cleared out. The Green Beret crew that had been in there before us, they had pretty much killed all the guys that were doing bad stuff in there. And we were just there to, you know, check in on things basically. Yep. And that's the same area where one of my friends got shot in the leg. So, you know, it's like, and they all claim that, you know, they're all trying to like, you know, come after you. I mean, we're pretty clear uniforms. They've seen us for years. I mean, this is 2007. They've already been around us for 4 years.
Yeah.
They know what we look like. They know what our gear looks like. Yep. You know, the kids know who we are. So, you know, they were just sketchy people that didn't want to be photographed.
Yeah.
You know, cause they knew that if they get their photos out there that, you know, they have a perception that the US could use that to, you know, oh, that he is a terrorist or, you know, he is a part of this or that.
Well, so it works both ways. Like we talked about that, like almost like a level of paranoia. The dogs are, if you can hear them, the dogs are on watch as well. Hey,
keeping us safe.
Yeah. So you guys almost have this level of paranoia all the time, especially in that environment and everybody's kind of out to get you. It sounds almost like the people that are occupying the country, like they have the exact same thought. They don't trust you guys at all.
Yeah. You know, I mean, ultimately no one trusts anyone. I mean, half of, you know, and that's the way it is for any, you know, war. No one trusts anyone. And it's always been that way. There's always people that are, you know, going to double cross and, you know, it's just the nature of it. I mean, half the people there were all, you know, former, Saddam Hussein, you know, they were, all of his, you know, they worked for him.
Yeah.
You know, this was the place where we were was a lot of the housing was all for the generals and stuff. And I was like their vacation spot to go. So, you know, there was a lot of mistrust on all sides and you had to do the best you could.
Right.
A lot of people used to, you know, we used to live with them. They were in the same bases with us, you know, and, you know, it's just something you learn to live with. You just never, you know, you never know what's going to happen, right? You always have to be ready to pull a trigger if you have to.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the way it is.
So we're in like 2006, 2007.
Yeah.
When did you leave the military?
Yeah. So I got out in late 2008. I got out of a sniper platoon. I became a weapons instructor for a couple months and taught people how to shoot and shoot machine guns and all sorts of different stuff. And then I got out and, you know, just kind of partied.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like free finally.
So you said you went into the military, you know, anti-government and punk rock and anthrax and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I've known quite a few people that went into the military very conservative and left very liberal. And they said it was because of everything that they saw and everything they experienced. I guess like, how did that work for you? You went in probably liberal.
Yeah, you know, I went in liberal, I mean, I guess I've always kind of come from a conservative household, and I think a lot of us, I was just, you know, rebelling against my parents, right?
That's a cool thing to do.
You know, you got to do that, right? In high school, you know, and you're in the, you know, 2000s, you know, you got to do that, right? And I got out, I was super angry, you know, I was this really angry person when I got out. You know, I hated the government. I didn't want my parents to like talk about it with people. And that was like my mom's big thing.
Oh, wow. When you left the Marine Corps. Yeah.
Or even like my last like year, I was just really, a lot of stuff happened in Iraq too, that, we basically got blamed for people's deaths.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of stuff went down and it just put like a sour taste in my mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, it just kind of, everything went sideways. And it went from like this utopia of I'm doing what I've wanted to do, you know, to now I'm just with like, I figured out it's all about politics, right?
Yep.
Like that's what ultimately the military is, you know, people are trying to get promoted. People are trying to, you know, they forget that you're fighting a war, honestly, you know, and that's what killed me in Iraq was that we were getting, you know, things were starting to slow down. And so it started to become this point where you're not just war fighting anymore. You're, you know, you got to look good in your uniform. I'd come back from 2 weeks out in the field and like living on one MRE every 3 days because I'm already carrying 120 pounds worth of gear.
Yeah.
I'm only going to bring, you know, a little bit of food and a lot of water. And, you know, they would like yell at us for not shaving. You know, like we just rolled in on a Humvee after being gone for 2 weeks.
Right, right.
And you're upset that I didn't shave.
I mean, it sounds just like as petty and stupid as a lot of corporate America shit is.
No, it totally. It's all the same, right? It's the same exact thing. And you're just like, and then you're just over it.
Yeah.
You're done, you know, and it just, you know, once you're done, you're not coming back.
Right.
You know, and that's the problem that the military has right now is no one, all the people that were really good at fighting left. I mean, honestly,
yeah.
The Marine Corps is full of a lot of people who were really good at following the rules mm-hmm. and really good at pleasing other people, you know, and now it's full of people who it's hard to find a veteran now in the Marine Corps that has been in battle and has a combat action ribbon and has pulled a trigger. I mean, it was already pretty rare to find, honestly, before, but now it's impossible.
I mean, again, like going back to like corporate America, cause that's my exposure.
Yeah.
And is that, a lot of times like, you know, Seattle's this booming tech market and you have like a lot of these tech companies that are on the rise and they have these salespeople that do great. And then they leave companies because of exactly what you're describing, politics.
Yeah.
These stupid little rules that, you know, in your world, you didn't shave despite being gone for several weeks.
Yeah.
And in the sales world, it might be like you have to run your emails by such and such before you can send them to somebody. And you're just sort of like, fuck, like I'm good at what I do and you guys are making these stupid decisions. Why do I want to be a part of it?
Yeah.
Like it sounds so parallel. And I wonder if, you know, sort of that experience for you, I mean, did that kind of play into you wanting to do what you're doing now, which is real estate? Like you're so bound up with things that you have to do in the military that are dumb and you don't want to go to a corporate job because it's going to be the same kind of shit.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a lot of why you're sort of running your own thing now?
You know, I mean, a little bit. I mean, it turned out to be that way. I originally, you know, I started working for my mom. My mom had been doing real estate for a long time and I was bouncing at a bar in Seattle and, you know, that's what I was doing when I got out. And she was like, how about you get your license and you come work for me?
Yeah.
You know, she's, you know, always wanted to have someone to hand everything off to. And so I said, sure, you know, I'll do it. And I used to hate real estate too. Absolutely right. Hate it. That's all my family talks about is real estate.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of those things your parents talk about constantly and all you just want to run away from it.
Right.
But I said,
this is the, sure. This is the 2000s rebellion again.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I ended up and that's thing. And I had her as a boss, Grant's, you know, family member, which I think honestly is harder than your average, mm-hmm. you know, boss. Cause you have a lot more standards to keep up to, I feel like. And you work a lot harder than you would for a normal company, yep. But I could never work a 9-to-5 job anymore. I could never do a job where I have to sit down at a desk all day and I have to answer to someone about why they don't like the font I used. You know what I mean? Like there's no reason for it. It's pointless. It's just a waste of energy and time.
Yep. For sure.
And you know, and I know some people love it. You know, people need that. I worked for the city of Woodway for a couple months, part time when I got out and on the public works crew. And it was, you know, 7 to 3 o'clock job every other day. And it was part time. And even that, like I couldn't do it. I couldn't have a boss.
Yeah.
You know, I was so over having someone tell me what to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. And that's the nice thing about real estate. You know, I'm my own boss now. I mean, obviously I work with my family and we're partners, but really it comes down to how hard I want to work. You know,
what year did you start real estate?
So I started in, early 2009, late 2008. Is when I started.
Pretty much the worst time to get into real estate.
Yeah, right. And that's when I was getting out of the military, right? Everyone's like, they're like just trying to constantly talk you out of things. They're trying to be like, oh, no, you don't want to leave the Marine Corps. You know, no, are you sure you want to, you know, leave?
Yeah,
you know, the real estate market's going down. I'm like, I don't care. You know, I'm out of here. Right. I don't care. You know, you could light me on fire. I'm still going to leave this. Yeah, it doesn't matter what you do. You give me, they were giving $50,000 bonuses to people to stay.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter. I was gone. And yeah, I mean, that's just how I ended up, you know, I had to get out of it.
Yeah.
And yeah. And so the real estate just gave me the opportunity. I started at the bottom. I started as I filled flyers, and it was 2008. We had 25 listings on at a time. I mean, we had so many listings and nothing was selling, you know, and then 2009 and 2010.
11 and
yeah,
probably yeah, getting well, it started 12, to pick up better,
yeah. after that, you know, and actually 2010 was probably our worst time, but, you know, it definitely had some slow days that was hard to deal with. That's for sure. You know, just nothing to do, 20 listings, filling up flyers and nothing selling. It really did suck to do. It was not fun to have that experience, but you know, it's just a part of the job. And I started from the bottom and now I'm a co-owner with, you know, my parents, to hopefully take it over someday completely. But, you know, it was just, you know, it's real estate.
So talk about how, like, the, you know, the last couple of years, you know, real estate's hot. Like we bought our house. I remember it was like, we got a lot off of the listing price. This was in 2009.
Yeah.
And we were just like, you know, we put 3% down and to us, like, that was so much money, even on a house that was that cheap.
Oh, it is a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, it is a lot of money. And in 2009, they were doing a lot of incentives where, you know, you buy a house and you get I think at that time, if you filed jointly, it was like a $14,000 return.
Yeah. The tax
like that
credit.
Yeah. So it was like, you know, do every, you know, please, like, we'll do anything that you want. Just buy a house.
Just buy our house. Please take it from us.
Yeah. And then you turn around and it's 2015 and we put our house on the market. We got offered $30,000 more than we listed it at and it sold in like a day. And yeah, it was just no qualms. And it was like equally as quick to buy this house as it was to get rid of our last one. So, you know, what's the kind of volume now that you're doing at this point in time?
So, I mean, we're actually doing less volume than we used to do, especially because, you know, prices have just gone up so much.
Yeah.
You know, we do 40 to 50 houses a year pretty consistently on both buyers and seller sides.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't have to do as much anymore, you know, because prices have gone up and it's a lot harder if you're working with buyers to get stuff. You know, you're spending a ton more time. You know, as opposed to like 2009, 2010, you pretty much
there's the watchdogs again.
The watchdogs at it again. You didn't have, you know, it was a lot. You could do a lot more because you didn't have to spend so much time on each place. You know, you put it on the market, or you could find a place really quickly for someone. You know, you just had to find the right place, right?
Yep.
But you could find pretty quickly, you know, generally. And there was such an inventory. You know, you had just thousands and thousands of homes on the market that had been on the market for 3 months, 4 months, and it was easy to find someone a house, you know? I could kick a can and find someone a house, right? And now it's like you're on offer number 10.
Yeah.
You know, I've shown someone 100 houses, and they're burnt out. I'm burnt out. You know, everyone gets really burnt out from it. And it's, you know, it's way more grueling than it ever was. Right. I would honestly take when it was more of a recession was a lot more equal, you know, market and more inventory. There was, you know, especially that 2013 timeframe, 2012 was a lot, you know, a lot more balanced.
Yep.
Right. So it was good for everyone. Everyone was pretty happy at the time. And now it's just like a nightmare. And you sell your house now, you still got to pay a lot of money for a house too, which makes it hard, you know? So yeah, you may make $200,000 off the house, but you know, in cash.
Right.
But then now you got to go buy something that's $200,000 more than it would have been.
And if you can, I remember like our requirements, I didn't feel like were crazy with the agent we were working with. It was like, we wanted two stories. We wanted 4 bedrooms or more. We wanted more than 2,000 square feet. And a 2-car garage and like impossible.
Yeah. And that's like what you think would be around everywhere, right? Like that's like the quintessential home right there. You know?
You think there'd be hundreds of them, but the stuff that we were finding was just like, this isn't close.
And that's still, you know, and it's still like, there's just a lot of trash on the market, you know, and people are staying in their homes longer, which is good. I'm glad people are staying in their homes longer. You know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, I want to live in my house for 30 years,
yep.
40 years. I hope to die in the house we live in now.
Hopefully not anytime soon.
Yeah. Hopefully in 50 years, right? Maybe 60, who knows? But you know, the problem with our society is we want to move every 5 years. You know, we want the new shiny thing, right? We want the new appliances. We want the new countertops. We want all this new stuff, yep. right? And that's where it gets hard and unsustainable, is people just keep, you know, up and, you know, they want something new and yep. they never make the equity in their house. And eventually it's going to go back down and people aren't going to be making 13% a year in, you know, equity.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be able to do that, you know, especially now there's a lot of people putting 0% down loans,
mm-hmm.
which is just astronomical to me that you would ever, you know, not put a dime down right. to buying a house.
Right.
I mean, it honestly scares me.
Yeah.
Cause like you're instantly in the hole.
Yep.
You know, it costs 8% to sell a house.
Yeah.
You know, best case scenario, you know, maybe 5% to sell a house mm-hmm. with your taxes and everything. And that, I mean, you go put 0% down, you're in the hole quite a bit.
How much longer do you think before, I mean, it's impossible to predict entirely, but like, are you seeing anything right now where it's like, we might have another year or two of this.
I thought we were going to start flatlining this year. That's what I thought, mm-hmm. you know, last year and the year before. But now what's happening is all the first time home buyers, which is the reason why we start flatlining, right? First time home buyer, they can no longer afford to buy that house, yep. right? Because it's gone up so too much. They don't have enough money, you know, and they just can't buy it. They can't afford it. So that person can't sell their house and then they can't, you know, they can't move up, right? So right. that's because we're a move up society. Everyone keeps moving up, yep. you know, as you make more money, you get the bigger
house. Until you're 80 and then you move down.
And then you move down. And then, yeah, it's a big roller coaster, right? But, you know, so that's what's going to be the problem. That's why I kept saying to myself, well, now there's just people moving up here replacing those people,
right.
you know, from California, from all over.
Yep.
I've sold so many houses to people from California lately, and just all over
yep.
the United States, you know, Montana, everyone's coming here to work for Amazon.
Ooh, yeah. That's well, so, you know, business opera, like I read something a few months ago that said that Seattle has the highest number of active cranes anywhere in the yeah. United States and third most in the world.
Yeah. And they can't even find, there's no operators.
Yeah.
I talked to the guy who came through one of my open houses the other day and he's, you know, told me what he did. He said, oh, I'm a crane operator. And I said, oh, you got a good job. You're in demand.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, you're busy.
You're hard to find yeah. and everyone wants you.
Yep.
And yeah, I think we've taken like cranes from all over the United States have just all basically come up here.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the building is up here now. I mean, it's amazing. Every time I go down to Seattle and there's another building going up,
yep.
you know, there's more inventory in apartments coming on this year than the past like 20 years combined.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that. 20 years of building and this year is going to be the whole combined last 20 years worth of inventory.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I know that our cul-de-sac has 8 houses on it and we were the newest. And then the people just to the left of us bought and it was like, I mean, they paid $220,000 more for a very similar floor plan
yeah.
than we paid 2 years ago. They came from, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, something yep. like that. And that thing turned around in, you know, a couple of days. And it was almost like I feel like it might have even been like sight unseen, like FaceTiming it. And yep. I've watched like Billion Dollar Listing, the TV show. And it seemed like there were a lot of times where like, if people have the money, they'll do it over a video conference.
Yeah.
It just like blows my mind.
Yeah. And in this market, a lot of people send their agent down and tell them, you know, is it worth it or not? And just not even come down to it. And which is scary though, as you know, so listings is what we do primarily. That's kind of our, you know, where we've made our stake in Edmonds mm-hmm. is we list homes in Edmonds. I don't want to take an offer though from someone that's done that if I don't have to.
Yeah.
Cause I don't want someone that hasn't seen the house in person. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like, and you know, that's a nightmare waiting to happen. Cause I want the house to come back on the market.
Yep.
You know, I want to flip because now they do the inspection and they don't like the house.
Right.
You know, they found something wrong cause they didn't see the house in person.
Oh, so there's definitely risk on your side for doing something like
totally.
That.
Totally. And you know, it's the people have kind of the Nordstrom's mentality. It seems like with houses mm-hmm. right now, like they just do anything they can to get the house and then they find something they don't like about it and they let it go.
Well, there's a lot of like parallels in life where it's like the chase is better than the destination.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the smallest thing will just, the smallest issue at the house, all of a sudden they don't like it.
Yep.
And they're out of here.
Well, think about being like a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old guy, and you thought this girl was the best thing ever, and then you date her and you find out what she's really like. And it was like the chase was awesome, but then the destination just kind of sucked.
Yeah. Bland, right?
The house that was next to, it was right next door to our old place. It was kind of the same similar situation to us, where it was like it sold in like a day and they gave them 30 grand over list. And then they ran the inspection and it was like the sewer line or something was like just ready to explode.
Yeah.
And the deal just blew up.
Yeah.
And, at the same time, I mean, something about that old house. So we were originally going to wait another year to buy our next house. And there was like this escalating situation with the neighbor that lived across the street where our baby was only, she was a year old at the time. And in the middle of the night, Jenny would be breastfeeding and this neighbor would start yelling obscenities at her. Or we would come home from like a date. We'd shut the door of the car, and this is like 9 o'clock at night, shut the door of the car, and we just hear him go, "Fuck off." And it was just like, oh, this could turn so bad so fast, especially with like a baby here. So maybe we move this up a year. And, you know, we're starting to look at houses and stuff. He's kind of heading off the deep end. And then the week before, so we were going to list our, we were going to do the open houses on the weekend, Monday or Tuesday or something. We see the sheriff's office or a sheriff's deputy pull up to his house. He's being evicted. Yeah. They go in to take everything out and put it on the front lawn. Yeah. This is a house directly across from us. So it's like, well, now we want to have this open house in 4 days. And we have this destroyed house across the street with all of this shit in the front.
Stuff in the front yard.
Yeah. So we delayed the open house by a week or a couple of weeks or something so they get rid of that. But it ended up being once the owner went in and assessed the damage, because he hadn't seen the inside for 8 months. The guy wasn't paying rent for almost a year. Yeah. And in Washington State, I don't know how much you know about like laws. I don't know if it's changed, but at that time, I guess it was very renter friendly. So yeah, people could people could just never pay rent and nothing's going
to
happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, ultimately you have to evict them. You have to go through that whole process, which takes forever.
Well, so he goes in and it's a total loss. It's like 270 grand in damage. Oh. And it was totally out of like the Hoarders show where they go in and it's like dog and cat feces everywhere. And like, the walls are destroyed and the windows are knocked out. And then he just took off. Like the guy left all the stuff there. And, that's like, it was nuts. Like with how that situation flipped on its head. And I guess like, that's a good segue. So one of the things I'm super interested in with regards to this show in my life is like, mind body connection, how the body integrates with emotions and psychology and stuff like that. And one thing I'm just so curious about is PTSD. You know, that American Sniper movie was a box office smash hit, and people got to really kind of, I feel like it was one of the first really mainstream movies that people saw a famous US veteran being portrayed and all the PTSD issues and stuff like that. In real estate, like one of the nice things about a corporate America job is that you sort of have this guaranteed paycheck week to week and month to month. And a thing like real estate or owning your own business or, whatever the case is, you're selling knitted hats outside of Husky Stadium, or you're selling online fitness programs, or you're selling real estate.
Yeah.
You have that uncertainty and it's really tough to predict. It probably becomes easier to predict, but there's always some level of uncertainty. There's going to be waves. Yeah. Psychologically, it just has to completely fuck with you. So I guess, take me to, you get out of the military, and even since the military, has there been any instances with you in PTSD when it comes to the Marine Corps or being overseas or any of that stuff?
I think it's different for everyone. I never, from my personal opinion, I mean, my wife might say something different, but I feel like it hasn't affected me a ton, right? Being overseas. It was just, I look at it as an experience. I enjoyed a lot of it. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. I almost went to a Humvee that got blown up and I ended up being the one behind it.
Yep.
Everyone survived. My friend blew out his eardrums. But it's kind of fucks you up in the head watching that stuff happen, And I mean, I go over to my friend's house and we have, he has his iMac or his Mac, whatever. I'm a PC guy, so I don't know the names besides my iPhone, right? Yeah. So his whatever, he's got stream on his TV, right? And all of a sudden there's like, we're with all our wives and like our girlfriends and stuff at the time, and like a picture of a face comes up on the, and it's like a chunk of a face, because it like, we watched like people got blown up in front of you, right? I mean, you've seen this like this horrific stuff, and I think everyone, you know, handles it differently. Mm-hmm. You know, some people really cannot take it, you know, it just, it fucks with their head too much, they're not prepared for, they're not, you know, for whatever reason, it just, you know, doesn't work for them.
Yeah.
You know, in their brain. I never had a ton of stuff. I drank really heavily when I was in my last, like when I got back from Iraq, I drank a fifth a night easily.
Oh, wow. Of whiskey.
I mean, it was just like, and it was a party, right? We got back, we had been to war, you know, and it was just like party, 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 forget what you've been through and, you know, just have fun.
Yeah.
Right. And then I met my wife and I kind of stopped drinking. You know, I kind of just, I still drank, but not as much. And then I progressed. So I barely even drink at all anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, that's probably my hardest thing. And I was, you know, and I was angry, you know, and I think that was a part of just everything that happened and, you know, stuff that you saw. And, you know, I've lost friends, which I think that's the hardest thing for me is the friends I've lost.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably what's fucked with me the most. You know, you meet these people, and they're just awesome people and they die, mm-hmm. you know, and it's one thing you're there with them 1 minute. And I never had friends that, you know, I never had any friends that died with me in battle.
Yeah.
You know, we were never fighting and someone died. But, you know, I've had friends that, you know, were on a deployment and you hear about it on the news or from another friend on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably what fucks you up the most.
Yeah.
It definitely takes a toll,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's just taxing on the brain. There's anything more than anything. And it just, you know, it's hard to overcome that stuff.
We talked a little bit a couple of months ago about, you know, you're talking about like, you're sort of thinking about these very stressful events. And I almost feel like it, we sort of dabbled into, you have these stressful times that you're thinking of and you get a headache or like, yeah. There's just certain, I guess like run me through a couple of examples on where there's been something, maybe a stomach problem or your neck hurt. Like,
yeah, I think, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, like, I know like you've talked about in the past, you know, you tense up, you know, and it's that, and what happens for me is it's just like, I get angry sometimes, mm-hmm. and, you know, and I've tried to stop it. And I've worked on it throughout my life, the past years. And you just, you know, some things just set you off. Like the stupidest stuff sets me off, you know, like driving around and just people being idiots. Right. Mm-hmm. I just boils my blood, you know? And I'm no good. I'm not the best driver in the world, but you know, and I just tense up and that's the basic thing. And then it's just, you just have that feeling like you're talking about, you know, it's where it's, everything just is like tight on you and it yep. hurts. Right.
Yep.
I don't, you know, sometimes I'll get headaches and stuff like that. I've definitely noticed, and my wife kind of, it's been brought to a head this past couple of months that, especially now I have two kids, I have a newborn, you know, a 3-month-old mm-hmm. baby. And
how old's your oldest?
So my oldest is two years and 3 months. He was born the 4th of July. Wow. And then my daughter is 3 months, going to be 3 months on the 16th. So she's born on the 16th of July.
So you wasted no time.
No time. Yeah. So we got two years apart, you know, and my little guy, he's awesome, but just crazy, you yep. know? And, but I forget things, you know, I can't remember what I ate for lunch most of the time. Mm-hmm. Like just, and I don't know if that's from just, you know, from what,
yeah.
but I just have a hard time, you know, that's why now I live by my calendar and my notes on my phone. Cause I can't remember things.
Yep.
I mean, I can, you know, it's not important things. It's the stupid little things, yep. right? Like people ask you, you know, what were you drinking yesterday? I'm like, that's my answer now is I don't know what I had for lunch yesterday.
Right, right, right.
So, you know, I can remember everything else. I can have no problem doing other stuff. Everything important in my life I can remember. It's just like the stupid things. You want to remember, you know? Like, yeah. you want to remember what you had for dinner the other night that was really good, you know? But it's like, I can't remember it.
I mean, when I was talking to Tia Wright recently, on this show, I told her that like I have this innate ability to remember everything, small and big.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, it's a gift, but it's also a curse.
Yeah.
And the same, I mean, it's exactly the same. Like if you have a tough time remembering things, like it's the same idea. It's a gift in some ways.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a curse in others.
Yeah. And sure. That's, you know, it's like my wife, she's always like, I told you this. I'm like, no, you didn't. I swear to God you did. You know,
I think every week Jenny's mom comes over once a week on either Wednesday or Thursday. And I never remember what the day is supposed to be, but it'll be like, I'm at the park with Zoe. And I get a text, like we just get there and I get a text from Jenny and says, hey, my mom's waiting outside the house. And I'm like, did you tell me she was going to be here? And what? She's like, yeah, no, I told you that on Friday or whatever. And I'm like, fucking remember. Yeah. And then I have to turn around and tell Zoe, sorry, we can't go to the park. We're going to go. We got to go back. You know, we got to go back home. And it's like, you know, and then kids flip the fuck out because they're all crazy.
Well, yeah, it's a little thing, right? It doesn't matter what it is. It's like you didn't get that, you know, whatever they didn't want. You
yeah.
know, you had something in their minds. And
have you ever seen, so there's a great Instagram account called Asshole Parents. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
So it's definitely more so between Zoe being like 1 and 2.5. Now she's 3.5. So like she's a little less insane, but still very much insane.
Yeah.
But it would be like she'd go, Dad, can I have some raspberries on a plate? And I'd get her raspberries on a plate and I'd hand them to her. And then she'd throw herself on the ground and freak out. And I'd be like, what are you? And by the time she settled down, she'd be like, I wanted it on a green plate. Just like, fuck. Like, and that stupid little shit when I say little shit, I mean situations, not yeah. Zoe. But I see a psychologist every week and he asked me about the frustrations in my life. And it's like, you know, we love our kids, right? But
yeah.
At the same time, I've definitely had moments in the last 6 to 8 to 12 months where it's like the dumbest little thing. And I'll like, you know, I throw a plate and like, I've spent enough time crying about it that now I can, you know, I'm sort of like, okay, I'm getting better about thinking about the situation before I react to it.
Yeah.
But you know, there's so many times where it's just like, you know, as dads, like we want to be good dads, but
yeah,
like last Thursday, I made Zoe breakfast at 7:45 and I took her to school at 8:15 and I saw my therapist at 8:30. And so it was perfect because it
perfect
was because because it was like
you just been through hell.
Yeah, I get into his office and he's like, "What's you know, how's it been going since we saw each other last week?" And I'm like, oh, "Fuck." And I'm yeah. telling him this story that I made Zoe pancakes like she asked and I put them on her plate. And then I pour on the syrup on it. And I'm like, oh, you know, do you want some milk, sweetheart, or whatever? And she just starts screaming. And I'm like, what is your deal? And she said, I only wanted the syrup on that pancake, not that pancake. And I'm like, okay, we'll put them on both. So we put it on both. And then she wanted cereal. And she said she wanted Rice Krispies and Honey Nut Cheerios. So I was like, no problem. We can split it. I do that too. And I pour them both in the bowl. And little did I know that it was sacrilegious to put Cheerios on top of Rice Krispies because Krispies have to go on top of Cheerios. She flipped the fuck out again. And I was proud of myself because the first time with the pancakes, I got really upset. The second time with the cereal, I said, I'm just going to go upstairs and take a shower and yeah. I'll see you later.
Yeah.
And that's pretty, I mean, like, I guess what's, let's do like best dad story. And it can either be something where your kid made you really mad or you just sort of are like, I can't even be mad at that because you don't even know what the fuck you're doing. Like, you know, you can't even keep your head up straight. Gosh. Like it can be I know for sure there's one for me, but there's got to be one for you.
Shit. Probably the other day almost. Like, so my son, he doesn't talk yet. So he's a late bloomer. Right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, he's like he's 2 years old. Mm-hmm. He's like 3 feet tall almost. I mean, this kid's like a giant, yeah. right? But he just grunts. He's like a caveman. He doesn't, you know, he's like, well, no, he's going to learn how to talk. And he talks, you know, to himself and he talks when we like walk. And like, it's so funny because he talks when he's like doing something that he knows he shouldn't be doing.
Sure. Right?
Like he'll get on the counter and like trying to get into the cupboard to get like his snacks. And he's like, and he'll just sit there on the bench and like pull the bench up to the counter and then just like kind of be half on the counter, half on the bench.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he'll just be like, like he's talking, that's when he talks, right? It's like, man, I want him to talk, but I don't want him to do all this like dumb shit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But like yesterday, there's so many of them. It's like every He won't go down. It's like if it's not the perfect slide, right?
Sure.
You know? We always go to the Edmonds Elementary.
Okay.
Right. I don't know if you've ever took.
It's the one with like you can see the water from it.
Yeah,
like
it's you can see the water. Yeah. And it's the school right behind. Yep. It's got the the crappy baseball.
And they've got the three slides that go like they're like on different levels.
The three slides of death, right?
Yep. You know,
they're like straight down.
Yep.
Like he won't. It's like if it's not the perfect, like he'll like walk up to the slide and then like, not this one. Go to the next one.
Yeah,
not this one. Then go back. And
yeah,
it just goes back and forth, and then he'll finally like pick a slide and go on it. But like yesterday, we went to the pumpkin patch yesterday. This is probably the best example where he's at right now in life. And he decides like, you know, we bought him these boots, like went to Nordstrom's, right? Cause I'm at the mall for something. And then I'm like, well, we need boots. And I wasn't going up to Cabela's and all this other place. I'm like, I'm just going to buy him a pair of like bog boots.
You
know? Like, so I get him this like nice pair of boots. I'm like, you know, those would be perfect for winter time, for going out in the mud. You can go, you know, wear these when we go out in the, you know, in the field hunting and stuff. He'd probably be too big for them when I take them out,
but
he's like hates the boots, right? I mean, these are like the most they look so comfortable,
right?
Hates them, right. Doesn't want to wear them. But the only wants is, you know, Nikes or whatever. And so we go to the pumpkin patch, and it's Tuesday, there's no one there, so we're just like walking out, and then like my wife, like where we get there, and my wife tries to put the boots on them, like, oh no, like,
yeah,
shit just went off. Boots were tried to be put on. And he's not having it, right? And so we got his little sister Sienna there, and we're trying to like, you know, get her out of the car, and she's crying, and there's no one there. There's like, which is kind of nice, but then I'm like, man, if there was people here, he probably wouldn't be crying about this stuff because he'd be like, you know, intrigued by other people, right?
Yeah.
Not just us at this like empty pumpkin patch. And so we get out there, and he's not having it. He will not. He won't walk. He just refuses to walk. He won't play on anything. He won't do anything. So I'm like, oh, let's get in the wheelbarrow. Let's ride in the wheelbarrow. No, not happening. Right? And so he just sits down and he takes him off. He takes the boots off. So he's just out there in white socks in the middle. It's like pumpkin patch. I'm like, fine, I'll go back to the car. I'll get your Nikes, right? Your comfortable tennis shoes that you want.
And we'll destroy them.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. You know, who cares if we just buy you these brand new boots that are just the best thing ever? You can go in puddles in them, whatever. So I like run back to the car. And I just like see my wife just sitting there. She's got the baby in the carrier.
Yeah, yeah.
And I walk back, you know, I got shoes. And no, oh, he's not wearing shoes now. Shoes cannot happen. Why would you want to wear shoes when you're in the middle of a pumpkin patch, right? But he won't get up.
Fuck your shoes.
Yeah. Fuck your shoes. That's basically what he's saying to me. It's just like not having it. So like I just forced the shoes on. I'm like, no, this is not, we're doing it. You know, this is a non-issue here. It's happening whether you want it or not, which is kind of my like way that I go about like parenting with my son, which is so funny because I'm so much different with my daughter, even though she's still a baby. I'm
right.
Like, just like so much more like caring. Whereas my son, I'm like, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Let's just get through it. So then we put his shoes on, and now he won't walk. He won't walk anywhere. He's just standing there like he's in cement blocks, you know, and just screaming at the top of his lungs. I'm like, I don't care if you're screaming. There's no one out here. You know, I'm like, if you want to scream while we're out here, that's fine.
Yeah.
So I just let him like scream it out. And finally I like just can't take anymore. So I go pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm the guy that I give in cause I'm like, I can't listen to this anymore. So I take him over to like this little like, they have like a little pump where you can like pump water, and they have these little ducks that float down. And
yeah.
So now he's like, oh, there's water. We're back in business. He's good. There's a pump. He can pump water. He can grunt. He can, you know.
He's like Tim the Toolman Taylor.
He's like, okay, yeah. So where he's, you know, he's grunting, he's pumping water, we're having fun. Like 20 minutes goes by doing this, right? We're like, all right, finally, all right, we're ready to go to the pumpkin patch.
Yeah.
Nope. In blocks again. Not going to move.
Yeah.
And so we just walk out there. And then I just watch him. He throws himself back on the ground. Like the kid just literally.
I don't understand. Like the kid's doing that thing. It's like the throw. If you go on that asshole parents account, I bet for every 10 pictures they post, 8 of them are of the kids throwing themselves on the ground.
And he acts like I pushed him down. Like, I'm like 100 feet away from him. And he like, and I just watch him like roll onto his back and he throws his, like, I mean, honestly. This kid has like a professional career in soccer or something.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Like he's throwing.
He's a flopper.
Yeah, he's taking hits without anyone even touching him. But yeah, so eventually we just like, you know, like, fine, we're just going to carry you and the pumpkins and the babies. And we're going to, like,
yeah.
You know? And so all this goes by, we get, and we're like, fine, you know, we've got cookies at the car, just make it to the car. You'll get a cookie if you get to the car, you know, we get to the car and he gets in his car seat, doesn't even want the cookie. And it's like, all of a sudden, life is good. He is in the car seat. Doesn't even care about shoes now at this point.
Yeah.
And he's just looking out the window. And he's like the happiest kid ever.
Yeah.
It's like we went from like 0 to 100 and back to like, you know, 0 again.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, and that's what it is every day. I mean, day in and day out, that's the way he is. I mean,
I've read a lot of stuff about how kids, like, even though they're irrational, a lot of times the guard dogs are in the background again. The kids are irrational a lot of times and they throw these tantrums and stuff like that. But I was just telling my wife last night about how almost like as an advantage that it is for little kids, because again, like I talked earlier about this whole idea of like PTSD and emotional problems, and people bottle that shit up and they repress and they repress and they repress. And where kids can get in trouble is like, you know, it's so terrible to think about, but like abused as a kid, whether it's like physically or sexually or emotionally.
Yeah.
And then they shut off, and then they, you know, you meet them at when they're 16 and it seems like something seems a little off, but like you don't, because they've been pushing that shit down.
Yeah.
And then they can't deal with it till they're 30 or whatever, you know, or older. And, I almost kind of envy them a lot in the sense that they can have these meltdowns because it's how they're feeling in the moment.
Yeah.
And we as adults, like, we don't do that, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't, if you're upset about something,
hold it in.
Yeah. Like if you walked outside right now and for some reason somebody, let's say that you walked out of the house and you got on your bicycle. I know you didn't ride a bicycle, but you get on your bicycle and you're riding down the street and somebody throws a stick between your spokes. You know, you may just be like, oh, you know, fuck that guy or whatever. When like a little kid, if you had like a little kid living inside of your mind, would go beat the shit out of that guy.
Yeah.
It's like, so part of being a rational adult is, oh, you know, it's good. But I think in maybe even in more ways, it's not as good.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like, you know, holding a lot of that shit in is bad. And that's sort of, I think that's almost like more of a healthy outlook that I've had in looking at Zoe. Like when I talk about these little outbursts of like, you know, she makes me mad and like I throw a toy of hers across the room. Like that used to happen way more often. And more so now I kind of look at her like, she's fucking nuts. Or it's like, God, she's so mad right now. And I wish I could get that mad about something.
Yeah. And that's the nice thing about, I think the military has really taught me is like, I have this like innate ability just to like zone things out. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I can zone pain out. Like when I got out of the military, I started working out and doing CrossFit.
Yeah.
Like I got like the biggest I'd ever been, you know, just super jacked. And I was just like, you know, like in the best shape of my life. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I could run great. I was running like I was like a 18 minute 3 mile.
Yeah.
You know, I was really fast. I was big and I was,
God, that's
like,
awesome.
Yeah. No, I was like ran everywhere and, but I could just, you know, block that pain out or whatever it was, you know, just that's the one thing that's really helped me in life is in the military. And I think I even had it before that. I've always just kind of been that person that can block that, like that stressor out. Right. Mm-hmm. I can learn to just push through it and not let it affect me as much. Which has been huge in real estate, huge when I was in the military. You know, it's like, you know, when you're on a 10-mile hike somewhere and you got a 100-pound pack on and you're, you know, going through fields in Iraq, you know, or even people in Afghanistan, it's like you can push through that shit, you know. You're golden, right? You know, you just block it out.
Yeah.
I go into these like blackouts, right? I just don't even remember half the stuff that happened because I just like completely shut my body down.
Yep.
I just remembered a better story, right? See, this is a part of that. Yeah, I have a hard time remembering stuff. I blocked it out. It was so bad. This is possibly the worst thing that's ever happened in the history of my life. Honestly, I'm not even joking. It was my wife's worst experience. It was just horrible. So my family, we have a place down in Long Beach on the coast. Right?
Okay.
Me and my dad, we built the place ourselves. He started when I was in Iraq. And then when I got back, we just built on the weekends. My dad built this whole house. He used to build houses. So we have this place down in Long Beach. Okay. It's an awesome place. We used to spend every 4th of July down there, me, my wife, my family, we spent tons of time down there, you know. Every winter we'd be down there for, you know, the weekend and stuff. And so we used to take my son down there, and then my wife got pregnant again. So last time he was down there was for the 4th of July on his first birthday.
Yeah.
And so we're like, well, let's go down to the beach now. You know, we got our 2-month-old and we're, you know, we got our 2-year-old and let's go down. We're ready. We're ready to make a car trip with our daughter. That's what we're worried about. We're about our daughter who's 2 months old and, you know, cause she hates car seats.
Yeah.
Hates them. Doesn't, I mean, she's starting to come around finally, but just cries constantly. Yeah. Okay. And so it's a 4-hour drive down there, you know, with 2 kids and a dog. And so I, all right, let's do it. So we decide, made the genius decision to go at like, well, let's just leave at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Cause we're going to miss all the traffic. The kids can sleep in the car.
Yep.
We'll be golden, right? Not going to be any issues at all. So we leave at like 8:30, something like that. And we're driving down. It's perfect. Kids are quiet. We're listening to podcasts. You know, we're doing all, we're listening to the radio. Nice. The, you know, the moon's out. Mm-hmm. There's not a cloud in the sky because, you know, middle of August or whatever. And just super, or I guess it's early September, but it was super nice out. And, or actually, no, it was Labor Day.
Yeah.
But so we get down there. Kids get out of the car. We get everyone out. We get the dog out. We get unpacked. And now my son is wide awake, right? It's like 11:30 at night, 12:30 maybe. And I'm like, well, it'll be no problem. We'll put him. So, and this house only has 2 bedrooms and like a little bonus room because it's on septic. So, you know, it's like a, it's a cabin,
yeah,
basically. But it's like just a really nice high-end cabin that we built. And so my son sleeps in the laundry room in the pack and play,
yeah,
which when he was 1 year old, not an issue. 2 years old and just 3 feet tall, super stacked. He can climb out of anything. I mean,
right.
He can climb out of his crib now with no, the bottom, the mattress is on the ground,
yeah,
in the crib, and he climbs out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's like a monkey. So we're like, we say hi to my parents, my brothers, you know, we say hi to everyone. And my daughter, she's still just sleeping. She's been out for like hours, you know, I'm like, is this kid still alive? Like, what's going on
here?
You know, this is like a total change. And so we play for a little bit, you know, because my son's up. And so we try to put him in bed. Well, he's not going to sleep.
Yeah.
You know? And jumps out. He's crying. He opens the door. And he's running around. And he's just having a good old time. And now it's like, you know, it's like 1:30 in the morning.
Right.
You're like, shit.
Of course, when they want to party and you're like.
Exactly, right?
Sleep. Yeah.
And then we're thinking, well, how are we going to do this? So we're like, well, let's bring him into our bed. Well, he's never slept in our bed. He doesn't sleep in our bed. Every time he does come in our bed, he thinks it's like, oh, it's time to play.
Yeah.
So he's like, I'm going to, you know, if I'm in bed with you guys, that means we're watching TV,
right,
or we're playing or, you know, or we're playing with the dog, mm-hmm, or whatever. He just doesn't, you know, he only sleeps in his bed.
Right.
And he doesn't know anything else since he was, you know, he's always been in his crib.
Right.
He's never known anything else since he can remember.
Yeah.
And so he won't fall asleep. And it's like 1:30, 2:30, 3:30, right? And it's just, he won't go to sleep. And then now he's starting to get where like, he's just tired. You
right.
know how, you know,
yep.
they get super tired,
yep.
But then they, you know, but he won't go to sleep.
The right? overtired.
Yeah. And then like, and then he's about to fall asleep and then, oh, he wakes up again. And before you know it, it's like 4 a.m. and we're like, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And if he's not going to stay in his bedroom at night, you know, in his pack and play, he's not going to sleep at any night,
yep.
You know, he's just not going to do it. So we're like, you know, after a long talk, we're like, sad. We're like, we're leaving. We're going back.
Yep.
Going back to Edmonds.
Yep.
Getting back home. And so go up to my parents, you know, I have Boyer come up. And of course they'd already been awake because the smoke detector started going off in the middle of the night. The battery died. Right. So like
to make it all even
yeah,
better.
No, it's yeah. like all these things compounded. Right. And so like I have, and that day I had been up since like 5 o'clock that morning or something. So I hadn't slept at all. Right. I'm just like, and my wife's like, oh, we'll just split the drive. I'm like, no, we're not going to split the
yeah.
drive. I mean, you're going to fall asleep. You know, one of us is going to be like, we need to just like, you know, go, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
I'm awake still right now. I'm like, got adrenaline from this kid. I'm like, let's just go. So tell my parents, we load everything up and it's like 4:30 in the morning to 4 a.m. We head back. Right. And we get like an hour in. All the kids fell asleep in the car, of course,
yeah.
like they do. And then he woke up and it was like the earth had come to an end. And there was no consoling this kid. Like, we pull over in the McDonald's parking lot. It's like 4:30 or 5:30, I guess, or sun's coming up, you know, and we're in South Bend. I don't know if you've ever been to South Bend, but it's on the way down to the coast to Long Beach. And so we're in the McDonald's parking lot and he's freaking out. And then now my daughter wakes up and she's freaking out and I'm in getting coffee for us to keep us awake. God. Dude, it's like, we're like in there for like 20 minutes and everyone's just screaming and yelling. And it's like, it's just a nightmare. And before you know it, you know, no one's coming. I'm like, let's just go. We're out of here. Yeah. You know, we got my daughter fed. She got fed and we tried to give food to my son. So my wife sat back with them in the middle, you know, between the two kids the whole time. And then like every like half hour, he'd wake up and just do this scream. We're like, we have to get there. We just have to get home. So then I'm coming down 9th Avenue, down the hill, down, you know, to Casper Street there. And there's this guy on this bike. He's going like 15 miles an hour. So slow, right? You know, and I'm like, I've been driving basically for 8 hours. I've had kids screaming for the last 4 hours. I'm just like, I'm spent, right? I got nothing left.
Yeah.
And so like I stop at the stop sign. Of course, I do a little California roll, right? Like,
yep.
Like a lot of people do it. You know, it was 8:30.
I got my first ticket doing that.
Well, he didn't stop at all, right? So as I'm making this corner, he comes up and he tries to go through it. And so he hits my car right at my son's window, right? Oh. And I'm like already like, this is where I'm like to the
this,
point where
this
I'm
is done. Marine Eric.
And then I look in my rear mirror and he goes, and he's telling me to pull over. So fine, I'll pull over.
The guy in the bike?
Yeah, the guy tells me to pull over. And then we just go, like we get into a shouting match. Well, he wasn't shouting. And then he starts like crying. Like I was yelling at this guy. I was like, if you're going to act like a car, you got to stop like a car too. It's not my, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, you were going so fucking slow. Like I just lost it. Right. It was like, I was just in dad rage mode. I had been up forever.
Yeah.
The kids were, you know, flipping out. And then this kid hit, or this guy hits, and he's probably like in his like early 60s or something, you know? And then he hits my kid's window, you know? And I'm like, I'm like, I got two kids in the car. They've been screaming. He goes, I don't care about your personal problems. And I was like, oh no.
So oh no, finally, you didn't.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm like, fine. I'm like, get out of here. My wife's like, we got two kids. We got two kids in the car. Like, she thinks I'm going to like hit this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
She's ready for me to deck the guy. Right. And I'm just like, I'm out. I'm done. I'm going home. I'm going to sleep. You know, I can't take this anymore. And so he goes. And then, he's going straight, same way I am home.
Yeah.
Up Olympic View Drive. And so I'm behind him on Olympic View Drive, just going 18 miles an hour because I'm not going to pass him.
Right.
And now I'm pretty sure he thinks I'm just following him and I'm going to kill him or something. And I turn off on our street and go. But I was like, that was the worst thing that's ever happened.
I thought you were about to tell me that he was your next door neighbor.
That would be hilarious though. That was the story to end all the stories.
That's awesome. I mean, mine like, so I have to, when I publish these podcasts, I have to put on explicit anytime that we say any of the bad words and we've said a lot of fucks and shit. So like,
that's what happens.
So it's an inappropriate story, but, Zoe was not potty trained, but we were working on it. And this was probably like maybe a year ago and she, maybe like a year and a half ago, but she, we're out. I asked her before we left the house, you know how this goes. Like you go, do you need to go potty? And she's like, nope. And I'm like, are you sure? And she's like, nope. And I'm like, let's just sit on the toilet. She said, no, I'm fine. I'm good. And so I'm like, okay, well, we're going to go to Best Buy, which like, you know, you think about the time of day I went, it probably was going to take us 15 minutes to get there.
Yeah.
And so we get, like 6 minutes on the way and I hear her start grunting and I'm like, so, hey, what's going on? And she's like, nothing. And I'm like, okay. And so it keeps happening. I'm like, Zoe, what are you doing? She's like, I pooped. And I'm like, okay, well, I've got the diaper bag. I'm good to go. Because she was wearing a diaper. And so we get to Best Buy, and I'm unbuckling her out of the car seat, and I can see coming out of the bottom of her jeans.
Oh, no.
Like the lava flow. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Okay. So I grab the diaper bag, and we're walking to the back men's. Well, I didn't know where it was at first. So I was like, asked the guy at the front, where's the restroom? And he's like, oh, it's that way. And I'm walking, and Zoe's like just a step ahead of me. And I kind of look behind her. And like the whole, like, it's like I can see like the lower back and all the way down the jeans. And like she's wearing boots, right? So like rain boots. So if it goes down in the jeans, it's going to go in the boots. And so we, I get to the bathroom, and the changing table is not in the stall for whatever fucking reason. It's out in the main, like the main part of the bathroom.
Yeah, I know.
And I put her up on there, and I take her jeans off, and I start to see that it's also like her shirt. I take her shirt off, and I just like, I took a picture and I sent it to my wife who was at work sitting at a table with a bunch of other moms. And it was like from like the bottom of her neck, like all the way down to where her feet were. On both sides. Like, it was just like, I don't even know. I'm like,
how does this happen?
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, like physics wise, how does this happen?
Yeah.
And I've only got so many wipes. So I'm like grabbing like paper towels, but all the Best Buy employees, because the guy at the front must have saw what was going on. So he was, you know, probably buzzing, like, guys, you gotta go see what's going on. And so like one after the other, every couple of minutes, a new guy would walk in. Oh man, you're gonna be okay. Yeah, man. It's crazy. Like
17-year-old
guy. Yeah, yeah. And it's like a minute later, another guy would go, oh, dude, what is going on? So like she had a change of clothes that was in the diaper bag, but I basically just like scrape the shit all off of the back of her. She still has like plenty of it all over, but I'm like, there's nothing really we can do. Put her back in the poopy car seat, and then because it leaked all over the car seat, and I bring her home and I bring her upstairs. I stand her in the bath. I take out all the car seat stuff. I put it into the utility sink, and I just like wash her head to toe. And it's like I'm looking there, and I'm just like, I can't even be mad. What am I gonna be mad about? I'm like, she's sitting here covered in her own feces. What can I really say?
Yeah.
But that's how kids are. The guard dogs are at it again. But hey, man, this has been fun. We're well over an hour.
Yeah.
Good stories and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of cool learning about, again, like the psychology of a lot of this stuff, and, you know, being in the Marines and everything like that. Like I don't know if I'll have an opportunity to interview another veteran. So thank you for your service. And you know, continue killing it on the real estate market, and hopefully that shit doesn't slow down anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't think it will. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man.
It's been a blast, man.
Yeah, man. Take care.